What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens at Fenway Park, and our next guest here on the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon, according to my notes, says he's the co-chair of the Jimmy Fund, but you may know him as the Brock star, Brock Holt. Brock, how we doing?
We're doing good. Love these 2 days every year. Obviously, when I played here, it's an important thing that we're doing, and I'm just happy to be back and a part of what we've got going on.
I mean, when you played, you were Mr. Everything. Like, if there was a position that needed to be filled in, infield, outfield, behind the plate, on the bump, wherever, you were that guy. And when we got here a little while ago, there you were in the back, Andy, there he was in the back of the bank.
Answering phone.
Volunteering.
I got $25 from Miss Patricia. So thank you, Patricia, if you're watching.
Patricia. Yeah, Miss Patricia. Way to go, Patty.
Yeah, she crushed it. Yeah, $25. She was a big Red Sox fan. She knew who she was talking to. And
awesome.
She even told me she loved me after the phone call was over. So got to know her really well in the 10-minute conversation that we had.
So you were formerly the Jimmy Fund captain for 5 years, and now in a little bit of a different role here as the co-chair. Tell us a little bit about that job, that role, what this year has been like.
Yeah, so was captain, Garrett Whitlock, captain now. I was captain for 4 or 5 years. I don't know the exact number, but something that I was really passionate about whenever I played here. And obviously, you know, looked for a way to come back. Me and my wife, Lakin, did a lot of work you know, while we were here with the Jimmy Fund, and then still tried to stay involved whenever I left. And, you know, unfortunately, when Larry Lucchino passed away, they reached out to me and asked if I wanted to do this. And fortunately, you know, me and TC were able to take it on and, you know, carry on that legacy kind of in that role. And, this year's been great. You know, we announced, you know, the co-chair last year at the telethon, and it's been a great year of growth. And you know, I'm still kind of learning, and I'm just happy to be back involved. As soon as I left Boston, I was trying to find my way back in some way, shape, or form, and here we are. And you know, hoping we can do a lot of good work.
What led you though at first to? I mean, it seems like everybody involved in the Red Sox and with a lot of Boston teams has some level of involvement with Dana-Farber, Jimmy Fund, or a great cause in town. But what led you to forge such a quick and now seemingly lifelong connection with the Jimmy Fund?
Yeah, it was easy. My first spring training in 2013 with the Red Sox, Lisa Sherber brings, you know, all the teenagers down. And that's kind of my first instance where I got to know kind of what the Jimmy Fund is, Dana-Farber, you know, how the Red Sox and the Jimmy Fund coincide. And David Ross, I believe, was the captain at the time, Will Middlebrooks. And, you know, just kind of learned from there. Took some trips over to the clinic and got to know some kids. And it was just something that clicked right away for me, and something that I was extremely excited about being a part of and trying to help however I could. So something I fell in love with pretty early on in my career here, in my time here, and very fortunate to still be a part of it.
And you weren't even a dad at that point.
Was not even a dad. No. We had Griff in 2016, so a couple of years later. I built some really good relationships. To me, that's what life's about, right? Like getting to know people and trying to make an impact. And, you know, you'll be surprised whenever you put yourself out there how your impact impacted as well, and built some relationships that I still keep to this day. And you know, it's just it's a special place that does special things, and just happy to be a part of it.
So when you were on the phone with Miss Patricia, what's the sales pitch to try to get people to donate? Because obviously, you know, Dana-Farber, the Jimmy Fund, they need the money now as much as ever, and it can go to so many important things. But sort of, what is your pitch to our listeners as why they need to donate?
Well, I think I don't know that people need a pitch, right? Like, they tune in, you hear the stories, you know, we have patients on all day, we have people, we have doctors, and I think it's the stories. Everybody's impacted by cancer, and I think these 2 days are super special because of the stories that are being told, and people start to kind of understand, you know, what the money goes to as far as research or clinical trials or whatever it may be. And, you know, these 2 days every year are amazing, how people from all over the world come together and donate, you know, however much to help this cause.
Yeah, they donate money, they donate their time. And we know the people that work at Dana-Farber, just, you know, it's their job, but they're just the countless hours of sweat and research and time and effort they put into it, because as we've come to learn over the years, and I'm sure you've been privy to this as well, it's not just the quality of the medical care that they get, but the entirety of the care, treating the patient for their diagnosis as well as their concerns, and then the way that Dana-Farber, thanks to the Jimmy Fund, treat the whole family and everyone attached to them as well, is spectacular and I think peerless.
Yes, yeah, the culture that they've built over there is second to none. It's you walk in the buildings, you just feel good. And it's a place that no one wants to be, but from the guy parking your car to the guy hopefully curing cancer one day, it's like everyone in between is there for you. And the times that I've been over, and, you know, obviously when I go to the clinic, it's, you know, how can we get the kid's mind off of their treatment? We're doing arts and crafts and stuff. But when you go visit the adult patients and you can have conversations with them, it's, this place saved my life. This place is awesome. Like, if it weren't for Dana-Farber and my doctors, my nurses, like, I wouldn't be here. And it's amazing to hear. Like, I haven't spoken to a single person that's gotten treatment at Dana-Farber, the Jimmy Fund, and they've not been positive about their experience and the people they've met along the way.
And you mentioned 2 days in the city of Boston for the Red Sox, for Ness and WEEI, but if also you look up at the map we got over here, if my eyes are right, I think we're up to 47 states have made a donation. 37, sorry. Yeah, bad math.
Math is hard.
Math is hard, you get it. As long as the math is good on the tote board and going up.
Three-quarters of America, that's pretty good.
Already, right?
But 37 states, and we hear stories of people coming here for treatment and obviously donating from, so it's not just, you know, Boston. This is sort of a national thing. And did you experience that, see that, take that with you in your career, and did you realize maybe how special this place is when you left for a little while?
Yeah, I mean, I felt the specialness, if specialness is a word.
Sure, we'll
right?
go with math and English.
Yeah, math is hard, English
your
is hard.
Segment. We're good.
Yeah, specialness. I felt that whenever I was here. And you go and you visit, and there's, like you said, there's people from all over the world coming here to get treatment. So I knew after I left how special of a place this was, and that's why I continued to, you know, obviously wanting to help, but, you know, those relationships that I spoke about earlier, those relationships carry on past me playing for the Red Sox, right? So it's like, how can I continue to be involved even when I'm not here? And, you know, now I'm here and co-chairing the thing with TC, and couldn't be more excited.
What was, like, when was the moment that you knew, if there was even, like, that moment, you know, playing here for the Sox, where you just, like, the electricity of Fenway, the people, the city, you know, it's a town, but it's a city, you know, it's not like anywhere else, that you just sort of like fell in love with the city? And what was that certain something that just made you say, like, I love this place?
Man, it's hard to think back to one moment. But I mean, this was basically my first experience as a big league player. I got called up with Pittsburgh in 2012. I got a September call-up. So I was up for a month with Pittsburgh, and then I got traded here that offseason. And then went to spring training, started in Pawtucket, and then I was kind of the up-and-down guy in 2013. Got called up when someone would get hurt, got sent down when he'd come back.
You rode the Lou Maroney Express for a while.
I did. I was on the one-way back and forth from Pawtucket, and there were times when I would come up and wouldn't even get activated, and I'd just go back the next day, you know. So that first year was rough, but, I mean, just getting to play at Fenway Park every day. You know, obviously 14-15 when I was up, majority of the time, we, you know, last place in the division, but place is packed every night. I think probably – once we started winning, you know, 16 won the division, 17 won the division. I think when you win here, it's when you is when you get it. And you know, fortunately, I was able to play on some pretty dang good teams and play with some really good players. So, just special place, a place that I never wanted to leave. For you know, obviously, you know, business side of things doesn't work out, but I would have stayed here as long as they let me in. But like I said, found my way back.
I wanted to ask your perspective because obviously Brock Holt is known as the great utility player, and it's only been like 10 years, but it seems like baseball is in a different. Mookie Betts is playing shortstop, center field. You know, Rafael is playing center field, second base. There's almost like a different. It's almost more like high school or travel, where all these great athletes are being asked to play different positions. Do you like that? Do you see where the game is going? Do you like where the game is going?
Yeah, I mean, I think. The guys are so athletic now that it's not as difficult as it once was. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do by any means. I had to do it because I wasn't good enough at one single position to stick around, you know. So I had to move around to stay.
Jack of all trades.
And if I wouldn't have done it, I probably wouldn't have had the career that I had. So you know, when they asked if I could play first base, I said yes. That's just what I had to do.
You want to do it now?
Well, okay, we could.
I don't know that it would be as good as it once was.
It's like,
you know,
the Belichick effect in a lot of ways. Like, you know, like you got to make the team somehow.
Yeah.
And like, whether it's on special teams, you got to play, you know, like you and Julian Edelman here at the same time, like guys that are just like, you want me to return kicks? You want me to play defensive back? You want me to be wide receiver?
Yeah.
Do I have to kick an extra point, play first base, whatever?
I just want to be on the field.
It's a Boston attitude.
Yeah. I just wanted to be on the field and help however I could. You know, it gave me more opportunity. You know, I came up as a second baseman shortstop. When I got here, Dustin Pedroia was a second baseman. I'm not playing second base for the Boston Red Sox, right?
I'm sure he was very inviting.
And he was. Dustin's great. He's one of my best friends and probably the guy that I talk to the most now that we're done playing. But I didn't want to play second base. Like, if you're a Boston Red Sox fan, if you're on the Boston Red Sox, like, you want Dustin Pedroia playing second base as many times as he can, as many days as he can. So for me, it was like, can you play third? Yes, I can play third. Have you ever played outfield? Yes, but yeah. No, I've never played outfield other than a slow pitch softball game one time, but I'll try it.
Sure.
And then if they throw you in Detroit on Sunday night baseball game and you play outfield for the first time. But I mean, that's just something that I had to do, and I grew to love it. I grew to love it because, you know, you see the game from different angles and it's fun.
That's fun.
Playing right field one day, and then, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm so far from the action. And the next day I'm playing third base, and I'm like, can I back up a little?
Too close. No, too
right
close.
On top.
Way too close.
Just want to ask you the last question. So I know obviously your dad now as well. What's your kids' level of baseball involvement like? And do you ever tell your kids, like, hey, listen, your dad played every position out there, so
yeah,
no grousing. Get out there and get it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they don't listen to me very much when it comes to baseball. So I try and teach them. I'm coaching both of their teams, and it's a thrill for me. I'm glad that both of them enjoy the game and love the game, and that's where I'm trying to keep it right now. As young as they are, I want them to want to go to baseball practice, want to go to the games and just enjoy it. And it's one of those things where I am coach on the field, but I try and be dad whenever we get off the field. But they're for me, that's life now. I'm dad, and I wouldn't want it any other way. There were two things I wanted to be when I grew up, and that was a dad and a professional baseball player. And I've gotten to do both of them, it's, you know, very fortunate.
All right, Brock. Brock Holt.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
The co-chair with Tom Caron, currently of the Jimmy Fund. Before we let you go, you want to turn around and read that bit? There's no math involved. You want to just turn around and read that big number behind you before we go to break?
Yeah, let's do it. 605,900. 931.
Well done. Well right, done. We are moving on up. WEEI Afternoons here at Fenway Park. We'll be back at the WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fund Telethon after this.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.